Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Welcome to Pixel Sift, your favourite weekly video game podcast that comes from here in Western Australia. On today's show, we're talking to Aranda Morrison and Mark Manell from Gnomic Studios. They're a Perth-based development team behind the game Square Heroes. And it's a very promising game, and they've been greenlit on Steam. They're up there at the moment, and they're coming to PS4 very, very soon.
Yeah, we're also discussing games and the law, trademarking, classifications, ROMs, and all those lawsuits they often hear about in the media. And of course, that includes console modding and even game emulators. But piracy can stem from burning games and mimicking ideas entirely. Yeah.
Yes, we're also talking game ripoffs. So games that are in one way or another a copy of a previous release with different skins, or even taking the name of an established IP and trying to make it your own. All that and more will be coming up today on Pixel Sift.
That's right. Let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
That's right, you're listening to Pixel Sift. It's Western Australia's video game podcast.
Yeah, we are a Western
We are the most yellow video game podcast you can find coming from Western Australia. Every week we do a gaming show for you and talk about all the bigger issues in gaming. This week we're talking about game clones and game ripoffs. Now, I don't know if you saw the news, but there was a relatively high-profile ripoff that managed to make it all the way to the top of the App Store. And it was a little game.
I've been waiting for Minecraft 2 forever.
Yeah, a little game by the name called Minecraft 2.
Yeah, on iOS, or even one of the hundreds of Flappy Bird clones as well.
Yeah. So that one was interesting because it made it all the way to the top, and it had pretty much exactly the same sort of promo graphics as the game itself. The icon looked the same, but when you loaded it up, it was Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, like punching enemies from the side, and it had two buttons in it. And they charged a lot of money for it. And
$7, wasn't it? $7
US? Yeah. Yep. And a bunch of kids would have just gone, "Oh, Minecraft 2, I love Minecraft. It's even more Minecrafty." Yeah, so there's a long history of it. That's one of the latest chapters in a history of game clones and game ripoffs. What can we think of any other ones that might have come to mind?
Well, just the other week, I was stumbling upon seemingly endless amounts of GTA ripoffs through, again, iOS. And they all kind of stitched into the GTA thing as well. So, just changing it up, like Great Theft Audio or something like that. And there's just endless amounts of them. And not just that, we go back and there's even console ripoffs. We had the old FC Twin, which is a Super Nintendo console ripoff.
What did that do exactly?
Oh, just played as Super Nintendo games.
Really? But you just don't buy it from Nintendo?
No, you buy it from FC Twin Company. And it was black and, like, you know, it looked very similar, but not quite the same thing.
Well, regarding clones, like, some clones have even become their own thing. Like, for example, the Saints Row franchise was pretty much a GTA clone. And that became its own little entity that, in some ways, was better than GTA.
Yeah, I mean, see, I wouldn't call that a clone. I'd just say it sparked it, you know, as much as, Wolfenstein and Doom kind of sparked the whole first-person shooter kind of scene. I mean, originally, all those games were kind of called Doom clones.
That's true.
Yeah. Before there was a proper name for it. So, like, yeah, Saints Row. Was it Saints Row?
Saints Row, the Saints Row.
I mean, great game. Franchise. And based on it, sure.
I think it's interesting when there's an actual, like, I guess the next thing in a particular genre. So GTA is almost a genre of itself now, and yeah. Saints Row was part of another chapter in that sort of genre. But then there's ones that do actually, you know,
properly actually try and steal giddy everything.
Up, yeah. Tony Abbott or whatever, something like that.
Tony Abbott.
Yeah.
The idea of a clone here, I feel, is trying to actually steal that game's audience by tricking them. Instead of just kind of, you know, doing an homage or pastiche of the game, or taking the mechanics and whatever that you really enjoyed, it's actually trying to steal their customers by bluffing them.
All right, I got something for you, Scott.
Go.
I got a game on my phone currently called Fallout Bird.
Yes.
Yeah, just how do you think... Like, what do you think this game's about?
What comes to mind?
Well,
like, I feel like you're setting me up for a failure here.
Yeah, absolutely, I am, yeah. But
I feel like it would be a Fallout-themed Flappy Bird.
Yeah, but like... I'm gonna play this game right now. Hang on.
You're gonna talk us through it?
Yeah, I'll just let the game speak for itself.
It's loading up right now.
Oh. It is not
Fallout. It's the company.
It's literally the band.
Oh, see, if Fallout 4 hadn't been, you know, top of the pops at the moment, that might have got
it's
me.
It's just like,
yeah.
Plus, you know, Fallout.
That's just imagine though, a lot of Fallout Boy fans would be thinking, "Oh man, every time I try to look up Fallout Boy, all I'm getting is this game. It's just clogging up my Google searches."
Are you a Fallout Boy fan? You want a game? It's like, okay,
that's one for you.
Yeah,
yeah. If you're typing in Fallout and game, and you're coming up with that, and that's what you're looking for, there you go. I mean, Flappy Bird is interesting though, in terms of clones, because a lot of them popped up basically overnight, became a huge success, and the guy was making a stack of money in terms of in-game advertising.
Yeah.
And it was kind of not really what he wanted. It became so popular and he kind of pulled the game straight away and it wasn't available. So the clones kind of popped up and filled the gap for people who weren't able to play the game
while
the game was gone.
I never even had the actual original Flappy Bird. I'm pretty sure I had a fish. It wasn't even... It was like a swimmy fish or something.
Yeah.
And Pokemon has had some. They had Micromon.
Yeah,
and it's something that ties into what we'll be talking about a little bit later in the show is legal battles, the Crazy Taxi Simpsons Hit and Run ripoff.
Okay,
which actually was, the Crazy Taxi took the Simpsons Hit and Run team to court. It was settled outside of court, so I don't know any details about that. But I mean, that was pretty blatant. There was also, even going back even further, we've got the Great Gianni Sisters, which was a Mario Brothers ripoff.
Yeah.
And
actually kickstarted a sequel to that not that long ago.
Gianni Sisters.
Yeah. Gianna Sisters.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You can see where
I'll know. Don't worry. Yeah. I know.
Even our old classic Pong, that was a ripoff of...
Tennis for Two.
Magnavox Odyssey. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, Pong was ripped off as well because I'm pretty sure Atari, something like they didn't copyright or patent their microchips or everything about their arcade machines. So as soon as they kind of popped them out into arcades, people basically just started ripping them off.
Yeah, pull them apart, wholesale clone them.
Their fix for that eventually was starting to like mislabel microchips and stuff. So when people tried to recreate it, they just couldn't get things working.
Because they obviously didn't know how to actually make it. They were just buying the bits and pieces and building it in the same order.
That's how I get by in life.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, exactly right. it's very interesting to see this. There was another example that we came across, which was more like of the Wolfenstein 3D when we were talking about shooters beforehand, and it was called Super Noah's Ark 3D.
Oh.
And that is my new favorite game, by the way.
That's for the churchy folks.
Yeah, it was basically, it was very similar looking to Wolfenstein 3D, but instead of fighting the Nazis, you are not fighting, you are putting restless animals to sleep.
You're putting them to bed.
Using a slingshot.
Yeah.
And then you just slingshot
them. No euphemism there, you're doing it.
Yeah. They go to sleep and then they're not parading around the ark, throwing everything off kilter. And all the bosses are like different animals. So there's like Ellie the elephant.
Sounds
and
like
Gerald
survival,
the giraffe.
Except,
and
for kids.
Yeah. It's very clearly ripped off almost entirely. I think even the engine itself was pretty much cloned wholesale. And then they just kind of rebranded it under the Noah brand. Hasn't had the same sort of legacy as Wolfenstein, though. Hasn't really continued on as much as...
So what I'm getting from this is like, the difference between a ripoff and a mod is money, pretty much.
Well, I feel like it's where the idea comes from. It's the game's intentions. I mean, like I said, these clone games are for making money. They're not meant to impress the audience in any kind of way.
And a lot of the time, they use deceptive sort of tactics to actually sucker people in, and they're not actually presenting the game itself. So, for example, if a game is, you know, like we talk about things like spiritual successes and things like that, where the game is heavily influenced by a particular game, but it's different enough that it's sort of its own thing, or even if it's not different enough, it's still its own thing.
Yeah.
That's still a game.
Mm.
But for these other ones like, you know, Minecraft 2, which was just basically, you know, complete shovelware.
It's like all the other ones like Total Miner or Fortress Craft, Castle Miner.
Yeah.
There's heaps of them out there.
And there's all these like multiplayer shootery ones of Minecraft as well. And they've just like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. But
I'm pretty sure there was a Dota one as well called LOL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that happened basically because they split the team and some of the people went on to create League of Legends.
I wouldn't go so far as to say LoL is a ripoff. I wouldn't say that.
One of the
guys. Yeah. I'd be very careful with that community.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a big thing.
I don't mean to upset anyone. But
yeah. What happened with the Dota was there was a split between the people who created the game. And one of the main creators went on to create League of Legends.
Yep.
And other ones went on to create Heroes of New Earth, which was another sort of Dota-y sort of style game.
Games are so bloody... Like, game developers, so incestuous.
Yeah, moving around and...
Everyone's jumping ships.
Jumping ships. Yeah. All right, so that's Games Clones. We will jump into our next segment now. We're having an interview with the guys from Gnomic Games.
Hey, Bobcats.
Pixel Sieve!
It's not Pixel Sieve. It's Pixel Sift.
Pixel Sieve!
Bright and early this morning, I was up at the crack of dawn chatting to Aranda Morrison and Mark Manel from Gnomic Studios. They're the devs behind Square Heroes. In Square Heroes, you're a genetically engineered killing machine with time on your hands. Having fulfilled your original purpose of saving the human race, you now get your kicks taking down all the challenges in the Galactic Heroes tournament. So it's a multiplayer twin stick shooter with a very cool, like cartoony aesthetic to it. And it's designed to be a multiplayer game for both couch co-op but also online multiplayer. I had a chat to them and I asked them how launching the game went and what playing Square Heroes with gamers in person feels like.
It's been great, actually. Yeah, I mean, because of the type of game it is, it's pretty much ideally suited to that setting, being a multiplayer game, and that works well, local multiplayer. So feedback's been wonderful. People love playing it with their mates, and they're often, you know, wandering around those events with friends, and they jump on and have a really good time. My name's Aranda Morrison, and I'm a director and coder at Gnomic Studios.
And my name's Mark. I'm a developer at Gnomic Studios.
What has been some of the feedback, I guess, that you've been getting as people have been playing the game, or what have you noticed as people are sitting there and playing the game?
There's a variety of things. Like, people, they have fun, but... Yeah, I mean, over the time, it's evolved a lot since we first started doing it. So the controls are a big thing. Sometimes people don't understand how to do the controls. So we pretty much have to tell them, because it's a twin stick shooter, many people will jump on and not, they'll fly around and attack just in the direction they're flying, but not realizing they can sort of aim back the other way and shoot people who are chasing them. So that's a fairly common one.
If you're not standing there over their shoulder sort of explaining it to them, how do you sort of communicate that within the game?
That's hard. We sort of rely on people to discover it, to you know, pick up the controller and play with things. And
There is also the tutorial at the beginning of the single player. So usually if you're playing the game for the first time yourself, you'll probably start with a single player. And there's a short tutorial there, guiding you through the controls where you shoot the aliens and get a hold of the basics, basically.
And you guys have got it's local multiplayer as well as online multiplayer. What was the advantages of both?
Well, that was actually one of the big reasons we made the second game, Square Heroes, because in Square Off, people, probably the main feedback item was they loved it, but they wanted to play online with their friends. So, we sort of redesigned the game a bit around being able to do online multiplayer, so having bots to fill out games when you haven't got your friends to play.
Yeah. So Square Off was on the Xbox Live Indie Games, so it was had local multiplayer on the Xbox, but you also have it on phone and tablet now, so that's just the single player mode of Square Off, the survival mode. And then, yeah, as Aranda said, Square Heroes, the multiplayer focus, it's an arena shooter. And particularly the local and online multiplayer, so that enables an interesting thing which we thought many games didn't have, which is couch versus couch gaming. So you could have three friends at one house, three friends at another house, and you can play on the couch against the other house.
Is it difficult to kind of maintain a community online for people who, you know, maybe might have picked up the game in a sale and maybe don't have a bunch of friends that they've got to play online yet? How do you kind of keep people online and playing?
Yeah, sure. That's one of the biggest problems that any multiplayer games, of course, particularly indie multiplayer games, have, is having that critical mass of online players so people can jump on and find other players. With our game, it's also kind of, you know, if you have the game and your friends have the game, you can jump online and play against them online. we're not there yet where you can jump online and immediately necessarily find a game to join. But we hope to get there. We're still aiming to get there with the upcoming PlayStation 4 release and that. But you're definitely right there. Maintaining that critical online mass so people can just jump in games online is really difficult. I mean, if you think about it, there's only, 10 or so games in the world that people are playing heavily online at any one time. You're not going to be in those top 10 as a new indie title. So,
just to jump into the PS4 release there, what was the process of getting, onto the PlayStation 4, and what are some of the challenges that you've noticed bringing it to this new platform?
Well, we can speak from our perspective. So, we were at PAX 2014 in Melbourne, PAX Oz 2014, and we just had a guy playing our game, playing clothes, looked like me or you. He won the game, thankfully, so I think he had a good time. And then he started speaking to us, and he was a rep from Sony, and we kept in touch and managed to keep on the conversation about getting on PlayStation 4, and that's how our journey started.
Sony are pretty, people are probably aware, but they're pretty onto the whole indie thing at the moment. They've got, it's almost easier to deal with Sony in some ways than Microsoft. They both have, an indie focus, but Sony have definitely stepped up their game in recent years.
Is it a big extra burden to move your game across onto this, or is it just going to be, have you got an engine that runs across both?
I would say it depends. So we're using Monogame as our framework. We kind of wrote our own engine, and that does support PlayStation 4. Quite a lot of the indie titles on PlayStation 4 are Monogames. So, but then I think I've been surprised by how much work it has been porting, just because of the specific console requirements. They have very strict requirements around the terminology you use. The word, we have different languages for our games. We have to support different languages. So the word for Italian for your touchpad button has to be exactly what they want, for example. And then there's things around the way you have to save data. So you have to, do a fair bit more coding than we anticipated. I think that's a fair statement, hey, Randa?
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly for online multiplayer games, there's a whole big set of requirements just for those. And yeah, we're right in the thick of that process now. So we've submitted to their QA department twice now. And so we're sort of fixing all their bugs right now. And it's definitely a long haul, but we're going to get there soon.
You guys have also been featured in some of the, indie bundles, and there was one flying bundle a couple of weeks ago. How does that work out for you guys, and what is the sort of the costs and the benefits of doing that?
Some of them are better than others financially. The flying bundle didn't make us a huge amount of money, but others have done quite well. Like the Indie Gala one was pretty good. And they bring in an influx of players, which is great. So you can see online there's a few games around during the time when the bundles are selling. And it's interesting when you talk about bundles, because various people recommend don't bundle too early in your release cycle, because it'll hurt your sales long run. But I think with our game, the building up the player base and reaching that critical mass is trumps all that. So.
Are you worried about, devaluing your game if you put it into these bundles where, people get it for cents on the dollar or something to that effect? Is there a concern about doing that?
Not anymore. it's kind of just the more people, the better. You're selling a few hundred copies through a bundle as opposed to selling 10 copies not through a sale price. What's the difference? We'd rather have more people playing it, even if it's not making as much money necessarily.
I tell you what, that game has got some cracker music in it. I've just been like humming along to that end of match theme for at least the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. That was Aranda Morrison and Mark Minnell. They're from Gnomic Studios. They're in Perth. You can check out Square Heroes at squareheroes.com. Pretty easy to find them.
Yeah, well worth a check out as well. It's a beautiful looking game. If you're on Twitch at the moment, you would have seen the awesome visuals coming up of that. If you aren't, then please go and check it out.
You can, yeah, so it's pretty cool. You guys had a chance to play it or at least check it out while you're at the Perth Games Fest.
It was my favorite thing there. I couldn't stop talking about it.
Awesome. I mean, you refer to it as like worms-ish in that, you know, you're kind of battling it out. But, you know, you float around and like you said, it's a two-stick kind of game. So, you're flying around and you also have the ability to shoot in any direction at the same time. Yeah, it's wicked. It looks great. I can't wait to play it. We're going to get into it after the show, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, let's jump into our next section.
You're listening to Pixel Sift. Or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
That's right, you're listening to Pixel Sift. You can find us on the internet at pixelsift.com.au. We've got all our episodes up there. We've also got videos from live streams of each episode, so you can check them out live and watch them again if you want. We've also got gameplay videos when we play things online.
Yeah, we're busy.
You can get on there.
We do stuff.
Yeah.
All the time.
All the time. Always doing stuff.
You guys do stuff.
Always pixel sifting. We are now going to have a bit of a chat about an interesting topic within the context of games and the lore. It's pretty broad. You could almost talk about this for an entire day. There are so many different facets to it. But this is off the back of Sony, that sort of the announcement that Sony was trying to trademark the term Let's Play and go from there. And I think it was an overzealous legal team.
It's a bit ambitious.
Who were just trying to get, we've got the word play in there for PlayStation. Mm-hmm. So let's put that under our thing. And they were rebuffed.
Mm. All right. So if they managed to do this, let's say it happened and it worked and all yay for Sony and they have it, what would happen? So would all the Let's Play videos be taken down?
Well, they could argue that. But the thing with trademarks is with a trademark and you don't want it to become generic. You don't want it to become an adjective. You don't want it to be like Google, where people use Google as a synonym for search. So, I'm going to go Google something, right? Because as soon as the trademark hits that point and it enters a sort of common language, and Let's Play, you could very much argue, is already part of the common language, you can't fight it in court anymore. Someone just needs to argue that, yes, everyone knows what this means and it means something other than...
Yeah, it's culturally relevant already. You can't bogart it and turn it into something that you want, especially like... Yeah, copyright and trademark world.
I just think it seems like a very... Sometimes you can sort of understand they have a brief, right? The legal teams that they would have for these particular things, and they'd be talking to them saying, all right, have a look out online, look for things that might be something that we should get our name on because we don't want someone else getting their name on it and attaching them to us. So, for example, we don't want anything, someone saying, let's play, and maybe we want to have that as a PlayStation slogan, and we don't want some other company using that. Right. So that's what would have happened, right? That would have been the brief. But it's kind of like people who are making the games and doing all the marketing and stuff probably should have talked to the lawyers and said, you probably don't want to go and alienate the people who are actually creating all this stuff for you for free. Mm. And making them kind of pushing them offside. So this sort of only came out when the documents were sort of released that they had been knocked back on this particular trademark.
Yeah, because they tried it in December. It wasn't like it was so recent. Like the article, everybody knew about it way later than when it actually happened.
Mm.
So like, have they tried to trademark other things in the like, and then they just get through, or when no one knows about it, or
it can be. I mean, a lot of these things are only found out when someone gets sued, effectively, and they have to kind of go chasing back on all the rulings and see where they actually have the claim to these particular phrases and terms and.
Or even parts of games. One that's popped up this year, especially because it's finally ran out. But last year, the Namco trademark on auxiliary games, that's now up. So, you know, there's a whole aspect of gaming that was kind of taken away from everybody because...
And for people who don't know what an auxiliary game would be.
Sorry, I'll get into it a little bit. It's basically, instead of... When discs came in, we had the problem of huge loading times and downtime, basically, and stagnant, static, screens, which you all know from PC or PlayStation or whatever. In cartridge days, that wasn't an issue. So, initially, they combated that by having little mini-games of, you know, arcade classics in the loading screens. One that I remember quite well was Ridge Racer. Had Galaxian, the little 80s arcade game in your loading screen. But Namco, who, you know, or behind Ridge Racer, actually trademarked it. So, nobody's been allowed to do it, you know, for the last... What is it?
Almost 20 years. Yeah.
I also don't understand entirely what this means. Because what if someone... like trademarked first person shooter? Is that since?
Well, it's a different.
What's the difference between that? And
so what they did with this was it was a patent, right? So okay. A patent is part of a piece of technology that you use to sell your product, and you say this is the thing that we have designed, and it's what makes our particular thing unique, and that's what value we bring along. So we did it first, and we've patented it. And if you know Joe Bloggs Game Studio decides to use it, then they're actually taking something that we thought of first. Okay. So that's what it was. They were trying to hold on to this little piece of, I guess, game design. And it's almost something, because Namco games, you would play them a little bit in the arcade. That's probably where you mostly would know them from. There weren't too much on other platforms. I mean, there were a few, but not heaps. So I just never even really assumed that you would have a loading game in there. I would just thought it would probably wasn't possible. You know, you'd see the little spinny wheel, or you'd see the, you know, the little icon moving around on your loading screen to know that your thing hadn't frozen, but you wouldn't be...
Well, that's it. I never even realized that kind of, you know, the difference in power between those games at the time, and knowing that that could actually happen. You know, while your game's struggling to load its next thing, you could have another game come in the meantime. Like, I didn't really think that was a, you know, overly possible thing, but it is.
And I wonder how many
due to legalities.
I wonder how many people have been developing games and then said, oh, we can stick something cool in here, and then realize after the fact, oh, actually, Namco owes the patent to it.
Because there is a way to beat patents. Like, there's this, you have to, you know, there's so many points and so many percentage of the product has to be different. So, I mean, it depends on the actual, like, legalities of the patent itself, because, you know, would they have patents to the idea of mini games, which I'm assuming they did, or was it specific kind of games that they were kind of poaching off? Because, so like I said, they were using, like, Galaxian, they were using existing old school games.
So, So they trademarked the fact that in a loading screen, you can play a different game.
That's
the concept that they trademarked.
Gameception.
Okay, so
that's right. Yeah.
How long have they had this for?
I think it happened like mid-90s, 95.
Okay,
but I also read somewhere else 98, so I have differing information there.
Some of these things as well, it depends on where they've actually been registered as well. So they might register it in one particular place, and then there's another jurisdiction that has a higher enforcement rate. Yeah. American law is really interesting in that, depending on which state you take certain cases, you'll have a different chance of winning, because they don't have like what we've got where basically you've got federal law and then you've got state law, which is kind of a mirror of federal law. They've got individual state laws for everything. That's why you can have
50 little countries in one.
Yeah, that's how you can have like all these different things. One will be legal here and that will not be legal in another state.
Yeah, so the reason why I asked is because MX versus ATV has, while it loads your map, you can actually play the same game. It's the same, but you can do like a freestyle mode. And then I think in some FIFA games, you can like take shots at the goal. Is that... That's not really a different game, is it? That's just playing the game in the loading screen.
That is a very interesting point, though. That's a perfect way that they've obviously navigated that patent.
Mm-hmm.
So they've included a mini game in your loading screen, but of their own game.
I see.
I mean, this all started... it's testing me to remember the name of the game, but... This whole idea of this minigame started off one that was, it was a 3D version of this game, and then in the loading screen you had this mini kind of just side-scrolling 2D version of the game,
right?
And that was so much better than the real thing.
So you just played in the menu and didn't go on to the
basically.
Next section. Yeah.
I wish I could remember the name of the game.
There's plenty of other reasons
struggling out there.
Yeah, there's plenty of other occasions where the law has kind of come into the world of gaming. One of the most interesting ones that I remember was back in the day they had if you remember back from the old PlayStation era, you could go to someone from the newspaper, you could go and read it and find a place that says they do mod chips for your PlayStation. And if you lived in Australia, there were lots of games that weren't released or they were very expensive. And basically what people would do would import them from overseas, and it would allow you to play the games that were NTSC format and Japanese format as well. And also other European ones.
Relatives coming back from Bali or Phuket.
Trying not to mention that.
Yeah, people, I mean, look,
that's the most of the reason
people in Australia would know.
But that was that's a market force, basically, is push people to that thing. But the reason why I mention this is because back in the 90s, Sony took one of the manufacturers of mod chips, one of the most popular ones, to court, and it went all the way up to the High Court, and went all the way through, and they ruled that mod chips were legal and that it was your property and you're allowed to modify them and to for the purpose of playing games from other regions, to remove a region restriction. And that also means that for things like DVD players and stuff, it also meant that was also true. You could use software and hardware mods and things like that.
So what exactly is a mod? So they put a piece of hardware into it?
Like a little, probably about smaller than a postage stamp, the little chip itself.
Yeah, okay.
And they actually soldered it in, and it allowed you to to instead of it blocking NTSC games if you put them in there, because there was nothing physically wrong with it. It was actually just a limitation to limit games to certain regions.
Okay.
It allows you to play games from any region as well.
And sometimes, I mean, like mod chips were really big. A lot of people had them. And sometimes they weren't, you know, an ongoing thing. Like you actually had to engage it.
Yeah,
for right. A different thing, like, you know, you do something
press
silly,
the power
like,
button three times, and then it would turn into the right mode,
something or something like that,
like yeah. An action replay on like
a bit like that,
Game
yeah,
Boy, yeah,
pretty much, yeah,
pretty much, yeah.
That's pretty much all we have got time for today. That was a very quick and fast show.
Yeah.
We've raced through it. So, if you want to have a listen to shows in. You know, any of the previous shows that we've had, you can jump onto our website. It is www.pixelsift.com.au. You can check out that. You will have videos up for Square Heroes. We'll have some links in there and some stuff about some interesting game laws and game ripoffs. Scott, where can people find us on social media?
People, you can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, as well as twitch.tv/pixelsift.
And Mitch, people are going to go and listen to other episodes. Where are they going to?
Yep, you can check it out on our website, iTunes, Pocket Cast, or using the RSS link on all our different pages. And we're also on YouTube now.
You can, yep, check us out on YouTube. We'll be up there as well. If you're on iTunes, give us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. It helps people find our show, and it helps us make better shows for you in the future. That's all we've got time for. We will catch you guys next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
See ya.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.